If you take a stroll through the mall, you're bound to pass stores that make you think, huh, I wonder how they stay in business. Well, here's a story about how one chain does it. Radio Shack reported a drop in sales this week, but it consistently posts profits even in these hard times. And it does so facing stiff competition from the likes of Best Buy and Target, as NPR's Wade Goodwin reports.
In a spoof article written a couple of years ago for America's finest fake news source, The Onion, Radio Shack CEO Julian Day professed bewilderment at how his company was making a profit. You wouldn't think that people still buy enough strobe lights and extension cords to support an entire nationwide chain, Day supposedly said. But I guess they must, or I wouldn't have this desk to sit behind all day. Back in the real world, Julian Day has done anything but sit behind his desk since taking over the company 3 years ago. Instead, he has cut and cut some more, slashing costs, paring away underperforming stores, getting Radio Shack prepared for a recession nobody seemed to know was coming.
There's no doubt that they've done a good job, in my mind, of lowering their expenses. So, yeah, I think Julian Day has done a very commendable job.
Michael Baker is an analyst with Deutsche Bank. Baker says the Radio Shack CEO went so far as to sell all the green plants to employees for $5 each so the company wouldn't have to spend any more money on maintenance. With good cash flow, Radio Shack has accumulated nearly $900 million, and that's allowing some home improvement of the non-vegetative variety.
They're also spending some money in trying to spruce up their existing stores. They're certainly spending a little bit more money to try to make them more attractive.
Radio Shack has gotten a big profit bump from the sale of digital converter boxes for analog televisions, but that market is drying up. GPS unit sales are also in decline. Radio Shack has shown nimbleness in moving from one hot gadget to the next, catching a sales wave for a quick, profitable ride.
Okay, and sir, just enter your telephone number on this device.
On a rainy weekday, the Radio Shack in East Dallas has only a few customers after lunch. A family pops in to buy a digital converter box and are out the door in under 5 minutes.
Okay, and just verify your information right here.
Instead of row after row of flat-screen TVs, there are five on display. Radio Shack has some of the qualities of your local auto parts store, or perhaps an Ace Hardware. If you need something and don't necessarily know exactly what you should buy, a sales associate will tell you and go get it for you. Meetu Sujan is a professor of marketing and consumer behavior at Tulane University.
Their stores are relatively small, and so again, it's not an overwhelming environment to be in. And I think there's still enough people who aren't that tech savvy, the older consumer.
And Radio Shack sells merchandise that has relatively high profit margins. Batteries, accessories, chargers, high-end cables, the list goes on. Last week, the company signaled it intends to live strong by announcing it would sponsor Lance Armstrong's team next year. The idea is that in 2010, the great Texas cyclist will be standing on the top of the Tour de France podium with Radio Shack executives nearby, clapping, cheering, and telling each other, "He's our man." Wade Goodwin, NPR News, Dallas.
This is NPR, National Public Radio.
The global recession has not quite struck down the entire Western world. The economy of Norway is booming. Housing prices are on the rise, interest rates are low, and Norway's frugal management of oil and gas money helped to build one of the world's biggest investment funds. Here's NPR's Erik Westervelt.
Captain Knut Jansen smiles and the Viking ship tattoos on his forearms flex as he steers the boat Patricia through a narrow channel past quaint vacation homes in the calm waters outside Kristiansand in southern Norway. And why shouldn't Jansen smile? The tour boat business is good this year, the sun is shining, and Johnny Cash is on the radio. Jansen chuckles when asked how his nation has fared so well financially when most of the rest of the world has seen only economic pain and stress. Isn't it lucky Norway has plenty of money, he says? A big, big oil fortune. Unlike many energy-rich nations, Norway didn't go on a spending spree after gas and oil was found in the mid-1970s. The country saved. Norway pumps much of its huge oil and gas revenue into a state investment fund. With few exceptions, the government is only allowed to spend 4% of the fund a year. Finance Ministry Director General Amund Utne.
By the end of this year, I guess we are approaching $400 billion U.S. dollars. That is huge, of course it isn't.
A $400 billion fund for a country of just over 4.5 million people. There's endless debate in Norway over how to use the money. Some would like to see tax cuts or individual payments, but for now there's general consensus here to continue to invest globally and grow the fund for the government to draw on in the future. But it wasn't just oil and gas revenue that saved Norway during the downturn. The nation severely tightened banking oversight after a banking crisis in the early 1990s. Since then, Norwegian banks have loaned more prudently. There was no housing bubble here. And during the frenzy of the last decade, the banks largely stayed away from exotic investments and financial products, what Finance Ministry Director Utne calls the ruin of some U.S. and European banks.
They got all the bright guys to make all kind of fantastic products, very creative, and it turned out it was maybe not the best solution. In the end, I think the Norwegian banks are not as creative.
It's good to be boring sometimes.
Yes, I think in this situation it may be good to be somewhat boring. Yeah.
Kristin Holth, the vice president at DNB Nor, Norway's largest bank, warns that banks here have not been totally insulated from the global crisis and could feel more economic pain later this year and early next. But Holth is not that worried. It's Norway. Relax. Eat some fish.
We feel we are in an extremely strong situation because 80% of our activity is based in Norway. And the Norwegian economy is solid in oil and gas, in seafood, in shipping. And those markets are cyclical, yes, but we know they are cyclical, so we know how to handle the cyclicality of it.
Along a busy shopping district near Parliament in downtown Oslo, high-end shops, cafes, and restaurants are full and busy. People are taking leisurely lunches, kids are playing, and economist Knut Anton Mork is disillusioned.
There's no preparation being made for a non-oil economy.
Anton Mork worries oil revenue is making Norwegians complacent, self-centered, and soft. Some are spending too much time in their cabins in the woods and their family boats on the sea, he worries, while others are too eager to abuse Norway's generous social safety net. 11% of the working-age population in Norway is out on disability.
It's not that the government is handing out money to everybody to live a lavish life, but it's become, with all the various programs, very easy to escape from working. I call this an oil for leisure program.
Are you being a crank? Because, you know, the country's booming. You survived the worst economic crisis in a generation, really with 3% growth last year, while everyone else was hurting.
Sure, we've been lucky. But I don't think I'm being a crank. I think I'm saying we're living a lie. The lie is that we're taking care of everybody's needs. And we're not.
He says little is being done to deal with long-term problems like Norway's aging population and decaying rail and road network. He says it's time for Norwegians to get out of the sauna and get back to work. But his tough love message will be a tough sell to a nation whose rich oil and gas fields are expected to be productive for another 50 years or more. For now, most Norwegians seem relaxed and even a little proud of themselves that they survived the economic crisis in far better shape than any other country in Europe. Eric Westervelt, NPR News, Oslo.
This is Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Linda Wertheimer.
And I'm Steve Inskeep. Good morning. Renee's away in Afghanistan. We have some evidence here in Washington this morning that the biggest economic downturn since the Great Depression may be getting a little closer to ending. Latest numbers say the U.S. economy continued to shrink during the second quarter of the year, but at a much slower rate than before. The Commerce Department released data this morning showing that the growth rate fell by 1% between April and June compared to 6.4% the quarter before that. NPR's Jim Zeroli is covering this story and joins us now. Hi, Jim.
Hi, Steve.
So are people taking this as good news?
Yeah, because things were not are not as bad as they were. I mean, basically, this was the fourth straight quarter of declining growth. It was, in other words, the fourth time in a row that the amount of goods and services produced in the United States fell. This has been a very long, stubborn recession. It got underway in December 2007. It's still going on. It's lasted longer than anyone thought. It's been more severe than anyone expected. We have, 9.5% unemployment. This quarter, the quarter that just passed, April, May, and June, we saw drops in business spending, consumer spending, inventory investment. All these things declined. Consumer spending, which is a big part of the economy, fell by 1.2%. People that are feeling insecure about their jobs, so they're spending less and they're saving at a rate they haven't saved in more than a decade.
So I suppose if this is positive news at all, you'd phrase it that instead of the entire building burning down, maybe there's only several floors burning.
Yeah, I mean, this is recessions tend to end in a certain way, not completely predictable. But when things happen, we can state with some confidence that the recession is ending. And that's what happened. I mean, we saw declines in this past quarter, but they were smaller declines than we had before that. I mean, for instance, business spending on computers and equipment, which is one of the things the Commerce Department tracked, fell by 36% in the winter. Last quarter, it fell by 9%. And the same kind of thing can be said about, other parts of the economy. So this is really the first confirmation we've had that the recession is easing. We've had a lot of data suggesting that, almost every day, suggesting that things were improving. I think now it's undeniable. It's here in black and white. It looks like the winter of 2009 is going to be remembered as the peak of the downturn.
There are many economic questions here, also political questions. And one thing that people will be asking is about President Obama's stimulus plan, which has been much criticized in recent weeks. Can economists now say that this stimulus bill has had some positive effect?
Well, here's what we can say. This was the quarter in which a lot of stimulus money was spent, and government spending was one of the few real clear areas of strength in the economy. We saw federal spending in the first quarter fall by 4.3%. Last quarter, it was up nearly 11%, and the same was true, maybe to a lesser degree, with state and local government spending. It was down in the winter, but back up last quarter, despite the fact that so many state governments like California seem to be slashing, they were spending more in the second quarter. Now, the government says we still have more money, we still have more stimulus money in the pipeline, and that should help us out in the third quarter. Eventually, that has to run out. And the question really happens that comes up now is what happens when it does run out? Will we need more stimulus money? I mean, there were certainly economists who said that the stimulus package that we passed this year wasn't quite big enough. We needed more. If they're going to make that case, now would be the time to do it.
NPR's Jim Zaroli is in New York. Jim, thanks very much.
You're welcome.
Now, administration officials know the public has been carefully watching the stimulus plan the president signed earlier this year. Yesterday, the vice president and attorney general announced the stimulus would help pay for a $1 billion grant to law enforcement. The money would help cities keep police on the streets. NPR's Don Gagne reports from Philadelphia.
Vice President Biden, on stage in an ornate room in Philadelphia's City Hall, said that this town would be able to add 50 officers to its police force and more.
This money will allow the department to increase response time, improve operation and command center. That extra minute or two, as you all know, police officers know, can save a life. That's money well spent in my book. But it also is money that's going back into the economy.
Two rows of police officers stood behind Biden as he spoke. He said that helping police operations around the country helps to ensure stability in communities. But he also spoke more broadly, saying that the administration is dealing with what he called a great recession, one far deeper than expected.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Recovery Act is making a difference. Just ask these officers here. Yes, we still have a long, long way to go, but we are moving in the right direction.
Events like this are designed to counter Republican attacks on the stimulus, that it didn't do enough to help small businesses, that it didn't offer enough tax breaks, and that it didn't stop the loss of jobs. Last month alone, another 467,000 disappeared. Comments like this one earlier this month from Republican House Whip Eric Cantor continue. This is from an appearance on Fox News.
I do think it is fair to say that the stimulus is a flop. The goal that was set when we passed it was unemployment wouldn't rise past 8.5%. And what we see now is businesses just aren't hiring. Even the best projections have us losing 750,000 more jobs this year.
Yesterday in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania Governor Ed Rendell answered Cantor directly.
Because he's judging a program after less than 4 months that was intended to have an impact over 18 to 24 months.
By far the largest percentage of stimulus money going to states, 60%, is for education and job training programs and for health care. It's aimed at softening the blow for laid-off workers, helping them afford to hang on to their insurance. Another 16% is for transportation projects that should create lots of construction jobs, but most haven't gotten underway yet. Economist Mark Zandi.
It really does take a lot of time to get these projects up and running, particularly when you don't want to do bad projects, projects that aren't going to be very helpful for the economy in the long run. So I think the administration got a little ahead of itself.
Zandi is with the investment assessing website moodyseconomy.com. He says that while the Obama administration did overestimate the immediate impact the stimulus would have, he adds this.
This is not a failure. I think it's working. In fact, the economy is going from recession to recovery. That's happening right now, and it's no accident it's happening at the same time that the economic impact or benefit from the stimulus is reaching its maximum point. So the stimulus has really helped.
Zandi said that whatever claims Democrats and Republicans may be making now, the real impact of the stimulus won't be known until well into next year. Don Gagne, NPR News, Philadelphia.